in the nation's capital. This is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. We have a very interesting guest today, ladies and gentlemen, Eugene Schneeberg. He is the director of the Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships of the United States Department of Justice to talk about the national faith-based initiative throughout the country. And there's an awful lot of things going on. Before we start our program, the usual announcements. Now that we're doing announcements, I want to announce the fact that there is the National Reentry Resource Center, which is a project of the Bureau of Justice Assistance, Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice, all things you ever wanted to know about the reentry concept, www.nationalreentryresourcecenter.org. The American Probation and Parole Association want us to celebrate the issue of parole and probation agents, what we call community supervision officers here in the District of Columbia. The actual week is in July, but we're doing it early with all of the radio and television programs that we're doing to really get people to focus on the sacrifices and what these individuals do to protect our safety every day. So again, that's www.appa-net.org. Also, interestingly enough, the Louisiana Department of Corrections is also doing their own radio series on reentry, and they're the only other ones in the country. Go to Louisiana Corrections. Their website is way too long for me to give out, but Louisiana Division of Correction, if you go to that website and look for the radio shows, you will see what they have to offer. And back to our guest, Eugene Schneeberg. He's the director of the Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships, U.S. Department of Justice. Eugene, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Well, thanks for having me, Leonard. It's great to be here.
Eugene, let's set it up first in terms of faith-based initiatives. Why faith-based initiatives? I mean, we're the government. We're the criminal justice system. We're the people who are supposed to be out there protecting the lives and well-being of partners, of citizens, of communities. Why are we even talking about faith-based initiatives?
Well, that's a great question. Faith-based organizations have been doing work of service delivery in our country for tens, if not hundreds of years. And there's a wide recognition that faith-based and community-based organizations have a great impact on the work that's being done, particularly in local communities. Those are the folks with boots on the ground. They know the families. They know the individuals. And our president and this administration recognizes the value of partnerships and also recognizes that the federal government plays a large role in providing services, but is can benefit, of course, from the partnerships of faith-based and community-based.
The ministers and imams and the people within the whole Jewish faith,
rabbis?
The rabbis, geez. Okay, here we go. Here come the comments from my friends in New York, from the rabbis. I've talked to a lot of them, and they say, you know, Leonard, we bring a legitimacy. We bring a legitimacy to this issue that you and government do not have. We bring an honesty. We bring a sense of perspective. We know the individuals who we're trying to deal with. Government nibbles around the edges. We really deal with the heart and soul of what's wrong with our communities. Correct or incorrect?
Well, you couldn't be more correct. I think the word that came to my mind is credibility and moral authority. There's over 350,000 houses of worship in our country, and those combined are responsible for recruiting more than half of the volunteers in America.
Mm-hmm.
And so in communities, when people are in trouble, most times when people need support, they oftentimes go to their houses of worship.
Right. And they have an understanding of these issues that, quite frankly, government... I mean, look, I'm paid to do a job. I'm paid to come to the criminal justice system every day, and I do what I do, and hundreds of thousands of police officers and parole and probation agents and correctional officers, they come to their jobs every day. The individuals within a faith-based community, they do it out of love. They do it because their religious tenets tell them to do it. They do it because they think they can make a difference. They think that they can intervene in the life of somebody coming out of the prison system more meaningfully than we can, and quite frankly, they may be right.
Well, I think I would tend to agree with you as well that oftentimes folks feel this is a calling, but I do want to make an important clarification, which is that our office doesn't focus exclusively on faith-based groups, but also secular nonprofit organizations, and of course, they make huge contributions in every city and every town throughout this country.
All right, let me get into the whole concept of the Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. It's under the U.S. Department of Justice, but it's also at the same time under the White House. So you have 13 federal faith-based centers, the White House Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships, or the 13 centers throughout the country, and they're designed to do what?
Sure. So each center is designed to coordinate, strengthen partnerships between their federal agency and faith-based and nonprofit organizations. And so that plays out differently in different organizations. For instance, there's a center at the U.S. Department of Agriculture that's working on summer feeding programs and connecting the programs that agriculture has with programs in the community. The Veterans Administration is working on connecting faith-based and community-based groups with work around preventing homelessness among veterans. There's an office at the Housing and Urban Development that works on foreclosure prevention and first-time homebuyer programs and Small Business Administration. The list goes on and on. The Department of Education is working on school turnaround. And again, in each and every case, they are strengthening partnerships with their agency's priorities, partner with faith-based and nonprofit organizations, both locally and nationally.
So there are 13 federal centers out there designed to further this concept, to promote this concept, to be sure that faith-based and nonprofit organizations are welcomed into these issues. And the issues, I think, as we described them before the program, are offenders coming out of the prison system, responsible fathering initiatives, and youth violence. Those three issues.
Yeah, so those are the focus areas of my agency at the Department of Justice, the center at DOJ. And each center, as I stated, in the federal agencies have their own priorities, and oftentimes they overlap. For instance, there's a number of agencies that sit on the Interagency Reentry Council. So there's representatives from housing, because we know that young people that are coming home from incarceration need stable housing.
Mm-hmm.
There's representatives from education that are part of the working group, because offenders or formerly incarcerated folks, need to continue their education. So at our office, the priority areas, which you've already mentioned, are promoting effective and responsible prisoner reentry,
mm-hmm.
Working on issues of youth violence prevention, and lastly, which I think in my personal opinion, which is most important and cuts across all of these areas, is promoting responsible fatherhood.
You know, it's interesting because what government does is one thing, but I get the sense through these 13 faith-based centers, faith-based and neighborhood partnership centers throughout the country, operated under the auspices of the United States Department of Justice, it takes the existing resources, it takes the existing fabric, what's important to a community, and expands upon it and utilizes those resources to do a better job on those three subject areas that we've talked about. I mean, you know, again, it's the criminal justice system. We're limited in terms of what it is we can do. Why not reach out to the nonprofits and get them involved? Why not reach out to the faith-based community and get them involved? It seems to me that this takes government and extends it tenfold, 20-fold, 30-fold. So it's just not the fact that they can do a better job in many cases than the criminal justice system. It just expands the reach into these three priority areas tenfold, 20-fold, 30-fold because of what it is that you're doing.
Yeah, and I think it's not necessarily that these groups are doing a better job, but perhaps it's that they're doing it in conjunction with law enforcement, with the courts, with probation and parole. And that's a large part of what my job is, to connect these groups with partners that oftentimes might even seem unlikely partners,
mm-hmm.
with clergy working with police, clergy
mm-hmm.
working with sheriff's departments. And, you know, the federal government does a lot, and particularly around research and access to information and best practices, and that's what we want to be able to share with the field. What's working? What's effective? What does the data say? So we spend a lot of time focusing on providing technical assistance and also connecting folks. So if someone, like, for instance, CSOS's faith-based initiative, which is very successful, very effective program. It's working in D.C., and there's a group that wants to launch a similar initiative in California.
Sure.
My office is uniquely positioned to help generate that kind of peer-to-peer learning, and this radio broadcast and often kind of does the same thing.
Eugene, we discussed at the beginning of the show a little bit about yourself and the fact that both of us worked in the field. Both of us have a history of working with youth, working with younger people out in the field. So tell me a little bit about yourself. You came from Boston?
Sure, yeah. Born and raised. Was raised in Roxbury, Massachusetts. And Roxbury, for those who might not know, is really, I would say the roughest, toughest part of Boston. Mm-hmm. Was raised in the late 80s, crack epidemic, gangs kind of running rampant. Mm-hmm. And only by the grace of God didn't join a gang, was recruited to join a gang, recruited to sell drugs. And thanks to God and adults who were caring, was able to kind of be resilient and overcome some of those obstacles and go on to go to Boston University, studied urban affairs. I actually thought I was going to be a city planner, go back and do something about all the vacant buildings and abandoned lots in my community. But my first job out of college was working for a juvenile detention facility. And it was there that I really fell in love with working with these young people, and where my mind was really changed about the perceptions I had, that the preconceived notions I had, that these were these horrible kids with bad attitudes, and when I met them and heard their stories, I really realized that they were indeed, in many cases, victims, and had tremendous potential that just wasn't being tapped into. And so fell in love with the work then, and went on to work from working for the state juvenile justice agency to working for a faith-based nonprofit called Straight Ahead Ministries, mm-hmm. that really focused on providing hope to these young people inside the facilities, and went on to run their reentry programming, helping these young people to make the successful transition from incarceration back into the community.
Mm-hmm. These are tough assignments, though. I mean, you fell in love with a concept as I fell in love with a concept. I always said those kids taught me far more than I taught them. I came to the same realization when I was on the streets doing gang counseling in Baltimore, that a lot of these kids were salvageable, that they weren't the monsters. I mean, they were, you know, if you do the crime, you deserved the time. I mean, I'm not suggesting, and I'm quite sure we're not suggesting, if you do something nefarious or wrong or illegal, that you're not held responsible for it. But a lot of these kids, even though they were either involved in criminal activity or on the edges of criminal activity, virtually all of them were salvageable. Virtually all of them, given the right guidance, given a fathering figure, giving a firm hand and a come-to-you-know-what meeting from time to time, these were kids that could be plucked out, pulled out. But it was nevertheless an extraordinarily difficult assignment. I can't imagine tougher work than the time that I spent working with young kids caught up in the criminal justice system.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the need for having fathering figures. As I mentioned before we started, Leonard, that I grew up without my dad, 33 years old today, and never met him a day in my life. And so I think I was able to connect with those young people and connect with their experiences. And I've seen firsthand the impact of fatherlessness has on a community. It was actually the norm for my friends and I to grow up without our dads. And that really had a disastrous effect on our neighborhood, our community. And I think that's why I'm so proud and so excited to be working for this administration, working for this president, who also understands the importance of responsible fatherhood. As you probably know, and your listeners probably know, the president only met his father once in his life.
Right.
And so his being able to work on the president's fatherhood and mentoring initiative is a great opportunity to reach out to some of the outstanding fatherhood groups throughout the country that are doing great work. And you know, with Father's Day looming in just over a month, we're excited about the president doing his annual fatherhood speech and mm-hmm. all the programming that's associated with that.
You know, it's interesting because this administration, and as well as the prior administration of President Bush, the concept of faith-based, the concept of utilizing those resources, the power of those resources, then also reaching out to individuals and reminding them of their rights and responsibilities as father and how important fathering is. It seems to be an issue that goes across the political spectrum, that it's not necessarily Republican or Democrat. These are all things that everybody can support. But having said that, it's interesting that President Obama really has pushed this issue of prisoner reentry, really has cited the fact that we've got to do a better job in terms of the kids that are coming up through the criminal justice system, and reaching out to them is a very, very, very important factor in terms of getting them out of a life of crime.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the president is working in Chicago, saw this firsthand when he was in the Senate, and I think we're at a point, and you mentioned this too, reentry is something that has overwhelming bipartisan support. It's being smart on crime. It's saving taxpayer dollars. You know, mass incarceration is just incredibly expensive, as you all know, and by being smart on crime, we can not only reduce our prison population and make wise investments in prevention and intervention and reentry.
And most states are backing off of their incarcerative policies now. I'm not quite sure it's philosophical, but they simply can't afford to do it any longer. For the first time, the rate of incarceration in the United States is going down. So in states, in my heavens, newspaper articles that I read every single day, is states that can no longer afford a certain level of incarceration. Well, if we're going to continue to have an impact on crime, there needs to be an outreach to, in terms of prisoner reentry, in terms of kids on the street, in terms of fatherhood. If we're going to continue to reduce crime in America, we have to do those things.
Absolutely. And that's an area where there's, I think, increasing interest on the part of faith-based and community-based groups to get involved in reentry. They recognize we're at crisis points. We recognize these folks are coming home. They're coming home to our communities, and they need support. I also want to just call your attention. You mentioned the National Reentry Resource Center website in your opening. I want to call your attention to fatherhood.gov, which is really a clearinghouse for all things that are fatherhood. Also want to call your attention to an initiative that we're working on called the National Forum on Youth Violence Prevention. This is, at this point, a six-city initiative where city leadership, community-based, faith-based groups are working together to develop comprehensive violence prevention plans. Those cities are Boston, Chicago, Detroit, Memphis, San Jose, and Salinas, California. And to find out more information about the National Forum on Youth Violence Prevention, you can check out www.findyouthinfo.gov. That's findyouthinfo.gov, and there's a tab on there that says Youth Violence Prevention.
I want to reintroduce our guest, ladies and gentlemen, Eugene Schneeberg. He is the director of the Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. The U.S. Department of Justice is guided by the White House, which has been very, very, very influential in this effort. So we talked about fatherhood.gov. We talked about www.findyouthinformation.gov. All of this is designed to do what? Is to energize communities and use whatever resources available to attack these problems. I think that's the generic. We've pretty much substantiated that's what it is that we're trying to do. But put some meat on the bones. Okay, so the National Forum on Youth Violence Prevention, what is involved in that?
Sure. Well, as you know, youth violence is a critical issue in cities and towns throughout our nation. And often times, if you survey folks living in these cities and you ask them what's the most important issue, oftentimes youth violence bubbles up to the top. Obviously, public safety and people feeling safe, and particularly the safety of our young people, is of critical importance. The president, the attorney general, secretary of education got together just over a year ago and charged the federal agencies with coming up with some comprehensive approaches to addressing the issue of youth violence throughout the country. And so we started with the six cities that I mentioned earlier, Boston, Chicago, Detroit, Memphis, San Jose, and Salinas. We did a series of listening sessions throughout the summer to hear from folks in the communities what their concerns were, what was working, what wasn't working. And I think what was one of the very important pieces is we had buy-in from the mayors, the chiefs of police, superintendents of schools, people from public health, and the community. And each of those cities work to develop these comprehensive youth violence prevention plans that have a lot of community input. And that information is available on findyouthinfo.com. So the plans are finished. And we've just transitioned just in the latter part of April to the implementation phase, where these cities are now beginning to put these plans into action. And so findyouthinfo.gov has a lot of good information for cities that weren't able to participate in the national forum to go there to learn information, because it's definitely not these six cities that are the only ones that are struggling with these.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Now, what's the key ingredient? Are there key ingredients coming out of the experience of these various cities in terms of stopping youth violence or reducing it?
Absolutely. I think there's some basic principles that the data shows, that the evidence shows, that you have to have a balanced approach. When you go into these with solely a law enforcement approach, you don't get the results you want.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, law enforcement, police are critical components of youth violence prevention, but it has to be balanced. You have to have a strong prevention element. You need to reach young people before they get into trouble, before they get involved with the criminal justice system, providing things like after-school programs and tutoring programs and mentoring programs, all of which faith-based and community-based programs are uniquely suited to provide. Mm-hmm. You have to have an intervention component for those young people that have begun the process of having those brushes with the law or with the child welfare system or what have you. So you or those kids that may have be eligible for a diversion program. You need to have a strong intervention program. As I said, enforcement is critical. You need the cops. The cops play a critical role in getting the bad guys off the street. But you have to also, those guys are going to come home, and so you need to have an effective and thoughtful reentry component. So the data shows you need to have a balanced approach. You need to have a multidisciplinary approach. You need to have public health at the table. You need to have the schools at the table. You need to have law enforcement, faith-based, community-based, the business community. It really has to be a community-wide approach to this work.
I was reading a literature review some time ago and looking at the power of all of these different programs, and some are more powerful than others. And one of the most powerful programs was intervening in the lives of kids with social workers. The kids were acting out in school. They were starting to get involved in the criminal justice system. But we're talking about young kids. We're talking about preschool in some cases. We're talking about very young individuals, and where social workers were going into the homes and dealing principally with moms, because dad in many cases was not there, and talking about reading to your child 15 minutes a day, talking about effective parenting techniques, talking about what it takes to raise a child responsibly, basically saying, look, you know, you've got to be up before your kid, and that kid's got to eat before going out of the house. And that may sound simple, and that may sound, oppressive on the part of government taking over the lives of moms and their kids. But what they've shown, what the data have shown, is that this may be the most powerful anti-crime program that we have at our disposal. Not saying anything is bad with prisons, not saying anything is wrong with law enforcement, but in terms of sheer prevention, intervening in the lives of individuals early on and helping them in terms of how to raise that child and what to do about that child seems to be quite effective in terms of that child not going into the criminal justice system. So there's good, hard data that says intervention programs do have an impact.
And absolutely. And I think the third principle that the National Forum really espouses that these strategies need to be data-driven. They need to be looking at not only crime data, but school data, social service data as well. We need to be thinking about outcomes and tracking outcomes and being thoughtful and not just being kind of random in our approach.
Now, the Fatherhood Initiative, but can you summarize that? I mean, to a lot of people, that's confusing. What is a Fatherhood Initiative?
Sure. Well, there's been fatherhood programs in our country for 30, 40 years that have been effective. The president has been using the bully pulpit of his role as a public servant since his time in Illinois, every year using Father's Day as an opportunity to really lift up the importance of responsible fatherhood. And now, as the commander-in-chief, he's used this opportunity to really promote this on the federal level. So in his first year in office, the coordinator by the White House Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships under the leadership of Joshua Dubois, the executive director, they held a series of town hall meetings all throughout the country with federal agency principals. The attorney general had a round table in Atlanta. The Secretary of Education did a round table in New Hampshire around education. The Veterans Affairs Administrator did one with military dads and the like. And partner with, there's some outstanding fatherhood programs all throughout the country that are bringing they're doing excellent training for dads. They're convening dads. I can't really go into the specifics, but there's just quite a few excellent programs out there in the community that are doing great work in charging dads, equipping dads to effectively parent their children. And you know, being a dad is not an easy task. Mm-hmm. It's probably the hardest job you'll ever have. The president often talks about how being a dad is more challenging than being the president, mm-hmm. But it's also more rewarding. And so, quite frankly, if we had more responsible dads at home, we would need less federal programming.
How did we get to this? I mean, the kids, when I was on the streets in the city of Baltimore doing gang counseling, or whether jail or job corps, or the groups that I ran in the prison system, routinely did not have fathers. You talked about your experience. You talked about the president's experience. How in the name of heavens did we come up with a situation where the fathers are suddenly absent? Because I agree with you. If the fathers were there, steadfast, steady in the lives of their children, probably 50% of what it is that we're talking about today in terms of today's social ills would disappear. So what happened? Why are we at this point where we have to instruct and sometimes use the bully pulpit to get people involved in the lives of their own children?
That's a whole nother broadcast.
Yes, it is.
And I'd be happy to kind of have that conversation. But I think, there's a lot of contributing factors to the crisis we face in fatherlessness in this country. The numbers are continuing to trend up, and the number of children born out of wedlock is steadily rising. But I think that, it takes one person to change the destiny of a family. Mm-hmm. I grew up without my dad, but now I'm been married for almost 8 years, father of three, and training my children on how to be, responsible parents. And
right.
my oldest is 5 years old. So
sure.
I think, I live by that mantra that one person can change a destiny.
Well, my oldest is 26, and let me tell you, it is the most challenging thing. I mean, I've been in the criminal justice system for 40 years in a variety of capacities, and there's nothing that's been as challenging as being a good father. But the bottom line is that once we get fathers reconnected with their children, ordinarily good things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's... to use a faith term, I believe that God has designed the family to meet the needs of children, and our biological families are supposed to do that. We're supposed to nurture and protect and provide and train and teach. And when you remove a dad from that equation, you've done damage to that family. And so we're looking to continue to promote responsible fatherhood. We're continuing to lift up the efforts of the president and the attorney general. And there's a ton of good information on fatherhood.gov. So I just really encourage your listeners to go check that out.
Eugene, we only have about a minute left before we begin to close. What didn't we not hit? What needs to be hit? Anything else? Or did we cover everything?
Well, I encourage folks to check out the White House Office of Faith-Based Initiatives. If you go to whitehouse.gov, you can navigate fairly easy to the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives. There's a ton of work that's being done all throughout the federal government, all throughout this country, to engage faith-based and community-based groups in the work that's going on, particularly in this time of tough economic situations and budget cuts. We're in a unique time where faith-based and community-based groups are being increasingly more called upon to provide services to the most needy in this country, and we're looking forward to partnering. My office can be reached at partnerships@usdoj.gov. That's partnerships@usdoj.gov. Looking forward to hearing from any of your listeners that might be interested in learning more.
And we're going to do all of these, all the notes that we mentioned within the show, we're going to put them into the show notes so people can, when they listen to the show, if they come through our website, they will have steady access to them. Eugene Schneeberg, he is the director of the Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships of the United States Department of Justice. Ladies and gentlemen, just to go over some of the things that Eugene said today, www.fatherhood.gov, www.findyourself.gov. Oh, I'm sorry, findyouthinformation.gov.
Findyouthinfo.gov.
www.usdoj.gov for the Department of Justice, whitehouse.gov, and partnerships@usdoj.gov. We'll put all of those within the show notes. Do want to remind everybody once again, before we close, about the National Reentry Resource Center, www.nationalreentryresourcecenter.org, the American Probation and Parole Association, their efforts to celebrate the roles of parole and probation agents throughout the country, www.appa-net.org, and the Louisiana Department of Corrections. They have a whole series of interesting radio programs in terms of what it is that they do. If you go to the Louisiana Department of Corrections website, you can find your way to the radio shows. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. Watch for us next time, or listen for us next time, as we explore another very important topic in our criminal justice system. Have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.